This is Red Eyes Radio. Welcome. This is Red Eyes Radio, and you are listening to bbsradio.com. It is Thursday, the 18th of May, and I want to thank you all for tuning in today. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and I'm the editor of the Changing World News website, red-eyes.net, and I will be your host for the following hour, and I'm coming to you live still from the west coast of Sweden, but now from the new command center, the new Red Eyes studio. So I'm glad to get settled in over here and to do a few programs done in this new environment. So I'm very excited to get going today here. Now, everyone who tuned in about 2 weeks ago will already be familiar with today's guest, which is, of course, Freeman. If you missed that first show, you can simply pop over to the Red Eyes website, which is www.red-eyes.net for more details on how to listen to that first show. And I wanted to bring Freeman back on the program today, not only because we did get great response on the show we did last time, but also because there's lots more to talk about and a few issues that went under our radar, so to speak. And if you tie all these topics together, it almost become like a seamless discussion. And that basically can go on forever, I guess. So I wanted to do a follow-up show pretty early on here while things are relatively fresh, so to speak. So I'm very grateful that Freeman has taken the time to be back with us again today. So welcome, Freeman, and thanks for returning to us.
Hey, great to be here, Henrik.
Yeah, great. Are you doing good today?
Yeah. Man, hanging tough. Yeah.
Hanging tough. Sounds great. Yeah. You know, we have a few things that we can dive right into today, but before we do that, I would like to ask you regarding, I saw your latest blog entry, which, by the way, we can mention. You can pop over to Freeman's site, which is thefreemanperspective.blogspot.com. And I went there during the week and took a look at his new posting there. And I saw that you have been recently looking at the Celestine Prophecy, the new movie that is out.
Yes.
And from what I understand, you even met the writers, I guess.
I did. I got to meet James and Sally.
Ah, great. How was the movie? How was it like?
It was fantastic. I wonder if, you know, in the age of the dark hero that we're in, you know, we've left Superman behind, and now we have Hellspawn as our hero. You know, we've moved into this age of the dark hero with, like, you know, 24 and Jack Bauer being an evil good guy. So I wonder how the people are going to respond to this positive message that the Celestine Prophecy puts out, you know, because we've gotten used to the dark side of things. And I thought it was a fantastic movie. I thought it really elaborated well on the human potential and how we together can lift each other up through our own vibrations. You know, how your love shared with another person will raise them to a higher point in their being. And I thought it did a fantastic job of really explaining and showing and of the synchronistic path.
Yeah.
People were crying with joy during the movie.
Wow.
So if that gives you any indication, it really moved everyone.
Is it like a play movie, or is it like a documentary style, or
No, it's a full-on production. It's basically the book. You know, James said that he, James Redfield, the author, said that the first script was 6 hours long. And so that they had to go in and cut out. So he said that was the hardest thing, and I know exactly what he means. It's just so hard to cut things out.
Absolutely.
But,
Was this, is he the same author to, what was it called, the 10th and the 9th?
The 10th Insight and the Secrets of Shambhala.
Yeah. Is that the same author?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And have you read the Celestine Prophecy book, I guess?
Well, you know, it was so interesting. Back when the book first came out, everyone, I mean, it struck such a huge chord with all of humanity, with the entire planet, to the point where I would say to somebody that was just walking by, I was explaining to my friends about, because it gives you the insights in how to achieve a synchronistic, divine, mystical reality.
Yeah.
And so I'd be telling my friends about it as I was reading the book and exploring the insights, and I'm like, no, watch. And I'd stop some random person and say, hey, what insight are you on? And they would most typically say, and they knew what I was talking about, well, I'm kind of stuck on the third. And this was a very common answer, because the third insight requires you to see fields of energy around plants or people.
Yeah.
And this requires faith in your own imagination. And, of course, in today's real world, we've been trained to ignore our imagination and believe it to be something other than real.
Yeah.
So people get stuck on the third one because you got to believe that you're actually seeing these fields. When you are, you know. But it was amazing. I started actually practicing the insights put in the book, because all my life I have traveled around and had these mystical synchronicities occur, but I never had the words to describe why. I could just tell you, well, I'm really lucky, you know. Then the book came out, and it explained the methodology of synchronicity, and I said, well, here it is. And I'll tell you one little story. I was sitting at in a playground on a swing set, you know. This is in my 20s, my late 20s, just so you don't think I was some little kid. I still like to play.
It's okay.
You know, playing's what a life is about, right?
Absolutely.
So I'm sitting there, and this is just kind of a strange tale, but I'm sitting there and I sensed that I needed to go speak with these people at a picnic table. And so I told my friends, you know, hey, I'm practicing the Celestine Prophecies, and I feel this need to go talk to those people. And they're like, yeah, okay, whatever, Freeman, you know. They all think I'm a little crazy. But so I went over to those people, and I told them, you know, I'm over here because I'm practicing the insights of Celestine Prophecies, and you know, I felt this need to speak with you. And they said, oh, yeah, we've read the Celestine Prophecies, but we're more with the Palladian view, which, of course, is this new channeled information coming from the Pleiades that people are writing a lot of books on. And I had just completed the first book by, I think it was Barbara Maciniak, The Palladian Agenda or something like that. And I had just finished the first book, and I said, oh, yeah, you know, I've read the Palladian stuff. I just finished that first book. And they said, oh, it's you we're waiting on. Hold on a second. And they went and they got the second book in the series and brought it to me.
Oh, man.
And then, you know, went on to give me a whole list of sites that were connected to the Palladians in South America or Central America and that I should go visit.
Amazing.
But so that's, you know, that's the reality that we actually live in.
Yeah.
And that's the reality that is being manipulated and usurped by these magicians that we definitely need to discuss some more of, because that's
absolutely. Are you good friends with the writers, or did you just meet them at the theater?
Well, there again, you know, he was giving a lecture while we were in Tucson.
Yeah.
There was James Redfield was in Tucson, and the same time we were there, me and you, at the Gem and Mineral Show. So I had told everyone, I'm going to meet James Redfield, you know, because I was going to go find him, or I expected synchronicity to bring me to him. And then I made a wrong choice. I should have followed one path, and I let my emotions get in the way, and I followed a different path, and I ended up not meeting James Redfield. And I was like, man, I know I'm destined to meet James Redfield. I know this is something that's supposed to happen in my life. Well, then next thing I know, he's in Austin. And so I'm like, God, this guy's following me. So I knew that this was the time and this was the place. And so I went, and they had the grand opening of the film, the premiere. And, of course, James and Sally are both showing up to all the premieres. And sure enough, you know, ran right into him, not even, you know, before the movie and everything. And he's agreed to come onto the Freeman Perspective, so he's going to be on my show.
Great, great. And is that only the people in Texas at this moment who can tune into the show there, or how does it work?
Yeah, live is the only way. But then, of course, I download or upload all of these shows onto conspiracycentral.net, which you can access from my website.
Perfect, and then the people will know.
Yeah, great. And I do also have this whole synchronicity discussed for a half an hour in my video as well.
Yes.
Absolutely. Promote the DVD a little bit there.
Absolutely, yeah, of course, which is called The Freeman Perspective, and you got on your thefreemanperspective.blogspot.com, you got a few links to where people can take a look at a little preview, a trailer.
Definitely.
And you have all the details there, right, on how to get yourself a copy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great, perfect. All right, so by the way, I have to check over here in Sweden if this movie, I have no idea if it's going to go up here on any theaters here or how it's going to work, so I definitely have to check that out. I think you had a few links to the site, I guess, on your latest blog entry.
I really do believe this philosophy could save the world. Because it releases you from the manipulation of these evil magicians. It really does. When you find that the universe is actually working in your favor.
Yeah.
That you are guided and you are protected. And all you got to do is let your soul shine, you know?
Yeah.
Be a friend of the world and everything works.
So do you think that is the reason why we are being, called or pushed down so much, because we have this ability to connect in this synchronistic way, and that will totally, liberate us from the current systems.
I definitely do. I believe that that's what it's all about. Like all the propaganda, all of the money, you know, cash usurps your entire metaphysical structure.
Yeah.
Our entire civilization seems to be designed to keep us down, keep us out of this freedom that this divine coincidence allows. Because imagine, you could just walk out your door, and at this point in my life, I can walk out my front door, and I can travel this entire country without a vehicle, without anything, and everywhere I go, I'm going to run into somebody I know. It doesn't matter where I go. I could be in Timbuktu, Tennessee, or whatever, and I'll run into somebody I know.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, the planet becomes an amazing place when you allow it to be.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I would like to, to connect a few dots here that we were discussing after the last show we did. And that is, of course, just as you said about the Pleiadians or the Pleiarians. I don't know what we should call them, but this is...
They've been called both. I just used the term Palladian because it's the first one that I... But I've heard Pleiadian, but yeah.
Absolutely, and this, of course, brings us to the Billy Meier case.
Yes.
Which we did talk a little bit about last time, after the show, I should say, and it's a strange case, because as far as I know, he claims that he's the only one who has true, genuine contact with the aliens. And what's your, do you have any particular take on all this? I mean, does this connect with, as you said, with the Philistine prophecy in any way, the pre-aliens?
Well, you know, I had a few issues with his. Okay, now, we had talked a little bit about George Green, and
yeah.
George Green being an ex-Bilderberger, one of the secret rulers of the world. He owns numerous banks in all of the villages around America and, I guess, the world. And George Green is now the one producing and promoting the books that are given to us by these Palladians through Billy Meyer.
Yeah.
When I saw, okay, they showed us pictures. I went to George Green's lecture, and he was showing us pictures of their flying saucers and how they had designed new free energy machines using the flying saucers that were sitting there with Billy Meyer. He showed us how it all worked with magnetics. But, you know, they were showing us pictures of the Palladians themselves, who were full-on human. But they had weapons, you know, and in order to show the power of their weapons, they shot a hole straight through a tree. And he showed us, you know, a number of photographs of this hole in the tree. And my heart, I'm like, well, you know, who are these Palladians to shoot holes in trees? You know, that to me already struck a chord where I didn't feel too comfortable with that. You know, them and their weapons, and, oh, well, we only use them if, you know, necessary. Well, you know, what's necessary? But so there were a few things that started making me feel a little uneasy about these particular Palladians. When I read Barbara Marciniak or Barbara Hand Close books on the Palladians, I resonated with that. It felt good to me. I understood the message being given. But when I read the books that George Green is producing for the Palladians for Billy Meyer, such as Handbook for a New Paradigm.
Is he the writer of those books? Or?
Well, the Palladians are. He's the publisher. He pays for it all.
Okay. But does he, you know, do you know if they give them to him, or does he channel this in any way, or how is it?
I don't know.
Okay.
You know, to his credit, he did not charge me for my copy. He did just give it to me because I told him, you know, I don't have any money. But when I read it, it didn't resonate with me. It felt wrong. And I use my remote viewing talents or my intuition, whatever you want to call it, to see how I feel about things. And I did not resonate with these books at all. And I even got a bad feeling off of them. And so then I did a little more research, and I come to find that the contact, the Palladian contact that Billy Meyer has, is Shemyaza.
Yes.
And now Shemyaza is the general of the fallen angels, according to Enoch in the Book of Enoch. And he is the one that came down, had sex with the women, convinced the others to come down and also join him in his sexual endeavors. And then they taught women and humanity all the arts of magic. And now we're dealing with that. Now we're dealing with the fact that we have humans on this planet practicing magic, practicing ancient Hebrew mysticism, or what we now call the Kabbalah.
Yes. And this is the Bible, I guess.
Yeah.
That states this.
Yeah. It's right there, you know, and people like to pick and choose things out of the Bible and ignore the things that they don't understand, but when they come across Genesis 6 and it says, and the sons of God, or the Nephilim, came down and found the women of man fair and took of them all they chose and created crossbreeds with them.
Yeah.
You know, this gets very difficult for people that want to think of these sons of gods as angels. You know, like, you know, they were mating with humans.
And this did produce what is called the Nephilim.
Right, the giant.
There are a few different schools on this. You know, if you say that the actually fallen angels are the Nephilim, and I've heard a few others who state that just the offspring between the non-human entities and the human women, that they are called the Nephilim. Do you have any?
Right. No? That's right. Yeah.
The last one, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah. Well, I believe that Nephilim was also the word used for the sons of God. You know, so it says that the sons of God came down and created the Nephilim through mating with the earth humans.
Yeah.
So it does get a little confusing, yeah, unless you read Hebrew, which I don't. Although I do study the Hebrew alphabet so that I can understand Kabbalism.
Yeah.
But as far as reading Hebrew itself, I'm not that far along yet.
Yeah. Okay. And one picks up on it pretty fast, I guess, that there is something to the, you know, the Hebrew alphabet and even the letters and the symbols that they have, and it's fascinating. But I wanted to ask you, you know, I don't know if are you familiar with the Septuagint?
The what?
The Septuagint. It's like the Greek version, of the Bible, the first one. And there, I guess the words that they use are Giborim or Grigori or something like it too. And I guess that would be translated to the giants in English. Or the Titans, as the Greeks, I guess, had. And I don't know if you've got any theories on this, but do you think that there could be, you know, both giants, literal giants, and these Nephilim, the offspring of this intermarriage?
I do. I mean, there's definite archaeological evidence of gigantic people.
Yeah.
You know, they are just announcing that they've found the tomb of King Gilgamesh. Now, see, King Gilgamesh was one of these very titans that we're discussing. And his story is really interesting because, you know, his whole deal was that he was two-thirds god because his mother was a god or a goddess.
Yeah.
And so he felt he had the divine right to get the heck off Earth and get to the planet of Anu and live forever like the rest of the gods got to do.
Yeah.
So then he has the whole Epic of Gilgamesh, which is, of course, the first novel ever written, as far as we know. And the whole Epic of Gilgamesh tells of his tales of trying to get into the bases of the gods, having to deal with robots and lasers, you know, if you want to interpret it this way. And, of course, they never let him off the planet. But what we find out is that Gilgamesh was such a tyrant, and that because he was so super strong, he could defeat any man anywhere. And he just went wild and beat everyone up and took their wives and did whatever he wanted. And so the gods got together and they formed a new creature, which they called Enkidu. And if you read the description of Enkidu, who was created to partner up with Gilgamesh to stop him from beating and raping, and if you read the description of Enkidu, you'll find that it's Bigfoot.
Oh, really?
Absolutely. Bigfoot's in the Epic of Gilgamesh.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
Yeah. The more we look into these things, you know, the more our reality today is just, you know, so beyond what everyone thinks it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's why I love to look at these old stories and, you know, try to interpret them for what they might be. I mean, we could see them as symbolic meaning, but we also could sometimes take them literally and just, you know, look at it for what it is. And as you say, we at this time, I think that we are approaching, at least technologically, many of the things that, you know, ancient myths describe. We are, you know, splicing genomes and cross crossing humans with different animals and all kinds of crazy stuff, you know?
Yeah, what was the latest one? I remember the glow-in-the-dark pigs. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my God. They crossed these pigs with jellyfish, and they glow in the dark. They glow like this radiant green light. It's amazing.
Yeah,
it was on the BBC News.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember now. Yeah, I don't know what to make of all this, but it just there's some kind of bell, you know, that rings inside me that says that this somehow is connected to all the ancient stuff, you know. And I don't know if just technology or what kind of
point gets really confused, because we've got this whole mystical aspect, but then we've got this technical aspect of it, you know, the technology.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that is one question that still has to remain open, but I firmly believe there is a mystical aspect to this whole thing. But at the same time, we, right now on our planet, have the ability to generate this Armageddon that they're describing to us through, like, Left Behind. And I'm seeing that The Omen is coming out as a new movie. And so they're preparing us for Armageddon. But we actually have all the technological means to craft this Armageddon, this scenario. Like when the HAARP project was crafted, its abilities go way beyond what anybody expects. And you know, they're able to generate storms and earthquakes and floods and all the worst parts of the Bible. But at one time, there was a report that a meteor was directed straight over the HAARP facility and was tested as a meteor deflection shield. And it showed up in the Anchorage Daily News. They didn't mention HAARP, but they did mention the meteor coming in and the unusual effects that it had, where it struck the atmosphere, exploded, there was a huge boom, everyone thought it was the end of the world, everybody was in Anchorage was running to their basements to hide, and then there was an earthquake 3 hours later in Anchorage, Alaska. And these were all very unusual events. So what I found is that we most likely have the ability to hurl meteors at our own planet with precision. Because this meteor went directly over the HAARP facility, you know, it was a perfect shot. So if we have the ability to hurl meteors at our planet, control earthquakes, floods, hurricanes, cause plagues, and even if you wonder why they've been holding back on all of the holographic technology, you know, we expected to see holograms as advertising in by now. I mean, we've had holograms forever since, like, the 70s. And they're not pulling it out of their hat to use for advertisement. Then they're trying to, in my opinion, they're holding this technology back because they want to use it here in the future to confuse and deceive us.
Project Bluebeam.
Yes.
Of course. Yes, and that makes, you know, that makes all this even the more stranger, because, you know, I've said this many times before, either, you know, the Bible is prophetic or someone is using it as a blueprint to, you know, play out the end time scenario.
And that seems to be more the case. Because
you
know, like we talked last time of Nebuchadnezzar, Saddam, and the Shekinah.
Yes.
Well, you know, so you see how we put Saddam in power. He becomes Nebuchadnezzar, and then we strike him down with the Shekinah. This is an act. It's a stage play, you know? So they are absolutely enacting this thing. It's not something that's been divinely ordained, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
But on that note, we were talking about the Shekinah and Night and Lomas with their Web of Hiram, their Masonic discoveries into Masonic astrology.
Yeah,
and so they found that the Shekinah was a conjunction of Mercury and Venus before the rising sun, and that great events occur when Venus meets Mercury before the rising sun. Well, I finally found the next time that this is going to occur.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And it's November 7th will be the next shock and awe occurrence, the rising of Mercury and Venus.
This year?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So November 7th, we're going to have to keep an eye out and see what happens here.
I'm writing that up as we speak here. We gotta, yeah, definitely. That should be very interesting. And just to connect back to dates, I guess that wasn't the Omen, the new Omen movie, isn't that going to be released on 666? Yeah.
Yep.
And that is also, of course, one of those dates. I don't know what to make of it all, but it's interesting, and we need to, you know, have at least an eye on it. So.
Yeah, that one seems too easy, too obvious, you know.
Yeah, it does.
It wouldn't surprise me, though, because, you know, 666 is incorporated in a lot of the symbolism. If you look at Walt Disney's signature, you're going to see 666. And, of course, he was a fine Freemason from Kansas that ended up giving us Britney Spears. Well, of course, he's dead. But, you know, the whole cycle, he was totally an agent for these magicians. And he has 666 in his signature. Aleister Crowley, of course, was a fan of using 666 in his signature. And GE, if you look at the symbols in GE, their logo, the G and the E, you'll find a 666 in there. Volkswagen, VVV, that's 666 in Hebrew.
Yeah.
So they do, you know, have a lot of usage of 666, definitely. Even W can be somewhat translated, but that's slightly different. That would be 66, which falls to the Quiploth, which are the fallen angels again.
And the Quiploth is also a little bit of Swedish there. It's also isn't that like the dark side of the Kabbalah, the tree?
Absolutely.
If you reverse it downward, I guess.
Yes. It's the flip side of the tree of life, and it's said that those who meditate on the Quiloth, I guess that's the proper pronunciation of that. Will be led straight to madness. You know, to understand the Quiloth is to become mad.
And I don't know if this connects also, but I remember that there is I guess it's the 11th dot on the Kabbalah, the Tree of Life.
The dot.
Yeah, the dot, and I immediately thought about Darth Vader.
Uh-huh.
Connected or not, but, you know, it's kind of, you know...
Oh, wait, right there. You know, of course, we've got the whole Death Star around Saturn, and it looks just like the one that George Lucas put in his movie.
Exactly.
Well, in the new... Okay, did we discuss 66 and its connections to W?
I don't know if we did, but
okay.
Worth mentioning again. So.
Yeah, let me throw this at you, because this is crazy, just mentioning Star Wars. In Hebrew, 6 equals V, or V equals 6, right? Not like the Roman where it's 5. So in Hebrew, V is 6. So, you know, if you understand that these magicians actually will incorporate these symbols into their children's names, this is a practice that goes on if one is in, you know, really into Kabbalism, because you want to raise your child with these magical attachments. So H.W., Bush, H.W., his letters mean the emperor. Okay, we didn't. The emperor of the fallen angels, because W equals 66, right? Do you see how 6 equals V? Sorry, I got this. I got lost there. So W is 66. And when in Star Wars, when they come to kill all the Jedi, the Emperor, who would be HW, announces, execute Order 66 in the latest Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
And they say it 3 times just to make sure that you get it. And then they go and kill all the Jedi. So, in essence, W kills the Jedi. You know, there's a lot of symbolism incorporated in that last movie,
yeah.
The Revenge of the Sith.
Absolutely, and there is so much, you know, in all of this, and we should try to collect it all sometime, I guess, and do a thorough investigation on this. And I've begun a little project myself, actually, and I shouldn't say too much right now, but it certainly incorporates, you know, the six and the five and the 66, and I even, right off the top of my head here, I know that, you know, Route 66, for example, that cross-sections the entire continent. So, and I don't know if it's, do you know if that road still is it active still?
It's still active, but it's not the most used anymore. You know, Route 66 was the big, and what was that for? To get the military from the East Coast to the West Coast, you know, and get out there to get the gold. This has always been about the gold. But, yeah, we've got Highway 60, or Route 66, we've got the W, there was another one. Oh, Phillips 66, of course, the gas station. If you ever wondered why Phillips 66 was called Phillips 66, I don't know if you guys have those. I was wondering this, you know, when you were in America and when you drive down a highway, you're just bombarded by symbolism, right? I mean, you just see Chevron's cube, you see McDonald's double arches, you see Phillips 66, you see the pentagram of Texaco, you see the shell of Shell. I mean, it's just, you know, as you're driving down the highway, you're being bombarded by this symbolism.
Yeah.
Is it that way where you are? Do you guys have as much of this rampant symbolism?
It is, but, you know, it's as it always has been, I guess. Until you open your eyes and see it, you don't see it, but when you do, you see it everywhere.
Everywhere.
And it almost become, you know, kind of ridiculous in the end, you know, because you end up pointing out, you know, everything.
yeah. There's not a logo out there that I cannot, you know, that they're all linked to Freemasonry, you know, all of them when you look at it. Exxon, of course, has the double cross of the Templars. Well, what were the Templars into? Gold and arches, right? So you got your golden arches. They worship the king, the Burger King and the Dairy Queen, the cow goddess. They do everything by the square. So you're going to see the square of Wells Fargo. And one of my favorites, Jackson Hewlett, where they have the rising sun in the red square. The Compass Bank has the red square with the compass. So it's the square and compass, which is the symbol of Freemasonry.
Yeah.
Or if you ever wondered why Hitler took the swastika from a straightforward, you know, and canted the square, then you'll be led to the 47th proposition of Euclid, to where the canted square is fully an embodiment of a symbol of their ritual. Because the 47th proposition of Euclid, I keep wanting to say postulate, is incorporated in the ritual that they do within the lodge, and they call it, of course, squaring the lodge.
Yeah.
It goes on and on, you know, the pentagram of Texaco and the shell are symbols of Venus. You know, throw any of them at me, and I'll tell you, they're all there. They all have meaning and significance. They're not random at all.
They are not.
And you'll see who the secret rulers are of the world.
Absolutely. And I wanted to, you know, connect back here to, we were talking about the Pleiadians, or the Pleiarians, and Billy Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed also on your latest blog entry that you had a link to Stephen Greer, his Disclosure Project.
Yes.
And I noticed that he also, I don't know, about 2 weeks, I guess, 3 weeks, he announced that we are in contact right now. And even, you know, the Vatican has been discussing lately that if aliens, you know, should be baptized and all this crazy stuff. But, you know, it's almost like it's an announcement awaiting to come here any second now, it feels. I don't know, have you noticed any, you know, we have the UFO hacker, the mm-hmm. story last week, I guess, and it feels like they are beating the drum now to, you know, announce the disclosure. What, do you have any
yes.
thoughts on
this? I agree that disclosure is very close. But I also agree with Dr. Michael Sala that Dr. Stephen Greer is kind of leaving the dark side out of the picture.
Yes.
That he has evidence showing that these aliens have done bad things on Earth, but he leaves that evidence out. Now, why? I don't know. You know, maybe because he wants the topic to be more palatable and doesn't want to get into fear-based structures with the aliens. Or he is, you know, a patsy that is trying to design our perception. But definitely disclosure seems to be on the way. I mean, you know, the whole project, or disclosure project, was held before Congress. And, of course, the news just said, oh, Stephen Greer's up to his old tricks again. And, you know, not giving it any sort of... But they did mention it. That's one thing. They definitely mentioned it, but they didn't tell you how many witnesses he has proving extraterrestrial involvement on Earth.
It is a lot.
There is a lot.
Yeah. So, you know, what are we to... I mean, how would you react if let's say, by the end of this year or the beginning of next, that if we had an official disclosure, how would you look at that? What let's say that these guys that we are presented to are, you know, look pretty human and it's about the same height, and I guess we have this, if we take the Pleiadian view of it, I guess they are kind of, you know, Nordic looking,
mm-hmm.
A few of them, blonde and white skinned. I don't know, how would you react to that? It's impossible to answer, but I mean...
I'd be busy trying to unspin their spin, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And that's kind of my goal right now, is to give people enough information to decipher the spin from the non-spin, and, you know, so that we understand that this has been going on since the beginning, and this is not something new. And, Henrik, I really believe that we're not even alone on our own planet. You know, people talk about whether or not there's life in the universe. Well, I'm of the belief, and I have enough evidence and even a couple of doctors backing me, to believe that we're not even alone on our own planet. I believe in subterranean beings, and I believe in merfolk. I really do.
Yeah.
Because I have so much evidence. And then I also have psychic transmissions, which I kind of got into in my film as well. I drew that picture when I was 10, showing the
really
Syrians.
Yeah, absolutely. And you, of course, I guess, connected all of this in some sense to H.P. Lovecraft and the story of the Dogon, or Dagon, I should say,
mm-hmm.
that also, of course, connects to the Dogon tribe, which
right.
these stories about Sirius, and it's fascinating.
There's endless evidence to the fish people. It's just nobody's, you know, they want to not agree with it. But think about it, you know, now we've been talking a lot about magic, and who is our most notable magician but Merlin. And, of course, Mer is the ocean, and merfolk, mermaids, Merlin.
Yeah.
Magic and fish people go hand in hand. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you...
Even Lemuria, you know, or Sumer.
Yeah.
Sumer.
Absolutely. And I don't know if you've seen the occult world of commerce.
I'm sorry?
It's a presentation by Jordan Maxwell and another guy named Jason Whitney.
Yes, yes, the whole maritime... Now you know why our courts are in maritime. We're being ruled by the fish people.
Exactly. You know, yeah, it's a fascinating connection because, you know, you have the merchant.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, all of the banking laws are like... maritime law, and that presentation is amazing. So.
I agree. I love his wordplay. I've really been trying to get Jordan on the show, but he hasn't responded yet. Jim Mars just agreed to be on my show, and I'm real excited about that.
Absolutely.
He's showing the whole history of how Solomon's treasure, or prior to that, Moses' treasure, the Ark of the Covenant and all of these things, ended up leading the Nazis to creating flying saucers.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave it to him to explain all that, but, I mean, the story of the Ark of the Covenant and whatnot.
Absolutely, and it's it's again we have this counter culture or counter mythology running side by side or slightly below the official story, and it always seems to be this occult backdrop to almost everything throughout our entire history.
Let's see if I'm going too far with this one. Okay, our major music industry. Let's see if I'm going just off the edge here, all right? Look at one of the biggest, most famous, most rich, I mean, they own everything, Kiss. Okay,
yeah.
You know Kiss? Everybody knows Kiss, the rock group Kiss.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, what do we got standing before us in that makeup? Well, first of all, let's just mention that they are Jewish. Because we're talking about Hebrew Jewish mysticism.
Yeah.
And what you got is you got your Bacchus or Dionysus character by Paul Stanley with his pentagram, and he's the hermaphrodite because he wears his red lipstick and always has kind of a feminine male. He's the hermaphrodite Bacchus Dionysus character, including his pentagram. Then you move on and you've got the lead guitarist, Ace Frehley. Now, he was the spaceman, the ancient astronaut, the alien, right?
Yeah.
But he was replaced. And what did he get replaced by? An Egyptian, right? So then they have the drummer, who was the cat, which was a god of magic, Bast, an Egyptian. And that was later replaced by the fox, who is known as the vixen, who prepares the brew. And both the fox and the cat are symbols of the witchcraft itself. And then finally ending up with the blood-drinking, fire-breathing dragon lord, Gene Simmons.
That's right.
Okay, am I going too far here? Are we not seeing that very scenario of the magicians, the ancient astronauts, the Egyptians, all rolled into one right there in a rock group? And could it be that they knew what they were doing? And is this why they are the largest rock band in the world, owning, they own a lot. They are billionaires.
Yeah.
But to take it a step further, the Grateful Dead. Well, the Grateful Dead are a group that were originally known as the Warlocks, which, of course, is a male magician,
yeah,
a male witch. And the Warlocks then were joined by a man named Phil Lesh. And Phil Lesh turns out to have, as far as I can tell, a plant by the CIA. The man didn't even know how to play the bass when he joined the Grateful Dead, which, of course, then they became the Grateful Dead, and that's based on the Egyptian Book of the Dead, so now we're back to the Egyptian symbolism again and their whole use of the skull.
Yeah.
But now, I love to tell you the story of the day Phil Lesh took me to a Mason temple and tried to kill me.
Oops.
And I later found out that Bobby and Mickey are Bohemian Grovers and worshiping the old owl out there at Bohemian Grove.
Hmm.
Then we've got, it just goes on and on. Led Zeppelin or OTO. Marilyn Manson is too easy to pick apart.
I got one here.
Okay.
Queen, the British
Queen.
Rock band.
Yeah. Yes.
The name is quite interesting, of course, in itself. But it founded by among others the singer who's called Freddie Mercury.
Uh-huh.
Which is pretty interesting if you know something about alchemy.
Exactly.
And he was, let me see if I can pronounce this. He was born Farrokh Balsar, and he was born in Zanzibar to Indian Parsi parents. and they were dedicated to the ancient Persian religion of Zoroastrianism.
Right.
And according to Wikipedia, at his death, he had a Zoroastrian priest perform the ritual, and of course he died of AIDS. And I know that the band members afterwards opened up a trust that was called the Mercury Phoenix Trust.
Yeah.
You know, because they had on their, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but on their album they had Queen has their own coat of arms, and it was, you know, just like, exactly like the British royal family, the Windsors, but it was a big phoenix bird right above it, and then you had a Q in the middle and big letters in Queen. So, you know, it just adds to the mix, I guess, with all.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, the Great Mother Lodge there in England is on Queen Street.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And as you mentioned, you know, the singer in Tool, he paints one half red and the other half black, I guess. And he does his, you know, the androgynic theme, I guess.
Yes.
So we can just pick and choose here. And as you said, I don't know if the interesting question, I think, is if are they aware of what they are doing, or are they guided by someone or something? What's your take on that?
I believe that they, you know, most people join the Masons to get a good job. I believe that they, you know, they know that if they follow this path, you know, basically selling your soul to Satan, as it were, you know, the whole story of the crossroads and the guitarist at the crossroads selling his soul to Satan.
Yeah.
I do believe that they know, but they believe, you know, a lot of them believe it to be a really good thing. You know, I know I've talked with many OTO members, and of course they believe that this is humanity's true power. And honestly, I would agree with them to a point, until I see the evil being done. You know, it's by their fruits that I judge them.
Yeah.
And it definitely, I see, I mean, like going back to the Grateful Dead, for example, just as an example towards this, they were a wonderful band that
yeah.
drew good people out of the system. So anyone that didn't seem to really fit within the normal real-world system would be drawn out to the Grateful Dead, because here was a culture that was alive and active, and the money was easy. And, you know, watch Easy Money. Beware of Easy Money. So then they would take all of these kids that were the shining beacons, you know, the ones that were free spirits, and they'd be like a Pied Piper and lead them down a trail. And, you know, the government would supply them with all their drugs at Bonnaroo and whatnot. Now, I know people that run drugs for the government, so I'm not saying that without knowing what I'm talking about. They would give the drugs to the kids and then have them follow this Pied Piper, the Grateful Dead, and pick them off along the way. And then everyone gets on paper, everyone gets a warrant, and then they're wanted in some state that they're never going to return to. But I hear by 2008, America is going to be on a national ID system. And as soon as we do, that becomes a unified system. And all of a sudden, all these shining beacons of light that managed to pick up a ticket along the way and are now wanted in some other state due to some stupid reason generally, are all going to just vanish. They're all going to be in jail, in prison, or wherever they need them to be. So they're using good things to draw out good people, and then using that for evil.
Yeah, and at the same time, they can also, you know, it's the oldest trick in the book. You say that you represent something or someone or a good cause or even an interesting cause, you know, a Gnostic or, you know, who are, you know, into symbolism and like all this stuff, but in the process you end up just, you know, smothering the entire scene. I don't know what to call it, but you follow what I mean?
Yes. Yes. Women's Lib was, you know, sounded
yeah.
like a great thing, you know, but it was used against us, so that now our children are enslaved into educational systems because their moms have to work.
Exactly.
It's not, they use
that's how they use it. They know the, you know, the undercurrents that come from the people, and they instantaneously, I guess, jump on that new energy, or that new wave that is coming in, and then they hijack it and just smother it in crap, I guess.
Yeah. You know, people tell me, you know, you ruin everything. Because I'm watching Seinfeld, and I'm pointing out the Kabbalistic ritual that they're doing within the sitcom. And I've got pictures. I just finished the Tex Mars video with me and Tex Mars.
Freeman, wait, I have to break. We have 10 seconds left.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I totally forgot about the time here, so we've got to leave.
It's been great.
I just want to say thank you very much for being on the show, and we will stay in contact. Okay, Freeman?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay,
thank you.
I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So, okay, sorry, everyone. We're a bit late here, and I have to break. Tune in again next week, and this has been Red Eyes Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren. Talk later. Bye-bye, everyone.
Listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.